December 16, 2020 is the Watt from Pedro Show. Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. Started off this edition with Blue Train. This is John Coltrane live, November 22, 1961. And then we had Dusty from Danielle Howe and the Tantrums, which, yes, people, Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto on the Pleasure Point, a couple miles south, because we're still in quick quarantino mode. But I'm not totally man alone because of those engineers of Estonia with their incredible Skype invention, all the way from Columbia, South Carolina. I got John Furwood. Welcome aboard,
hey,
John.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me.
We got to right away thank Dylan Dickerson for making the connect.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Dylan's a super cool guy, and he's a connector for sure. He's making things happen here in Columbia.
If we're bricks, he's the mortar. Or if we're tiles, he's the grout. No, because I tell you, John, that, in a way, that's the way I look at bass sometimes, you know, a lot of times. You know, we got all this fancy tile. Now we need some grout to set it, right? Most people sitting on the can, they look at the tile. They don't look at the grout, but they're glad it's there. I tell you. Now, what I want from you, well, first of all, it's a Watt for Pedro show, so there's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers. But can you give me your earliest musical recollection, please?
I probably would say it would be having my much older brothers sharing their music. They were all born in the 50s, and they were big fans of, like, Bob Dylan, Beatles, Jim Croce, Birds. So that was kind of where I got my early music exposure.
But your earliest memory is hearing your brothers playing their music they liked.
Right.
Okay, D. Boone was into Jim Croce, and I was born in 57, so I'm kind of like your brothers.
Yes.
Okay, Sputnik. In the pad, where was this? Was this Columbia?
So I grew up in a small town in Florence, in South Carolina, called Florence.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Now, this pad, did it have instruments?
My older brother played guitar, and actually when they were all like in their teens, they had a little group. I've only seen, you know, it was before I was born. I've only seen like photos of them. They're, you know, I think my brother Bob was playing a little drum kit, and, older two brothers had, like Sears Silvertone guitars, you know, and for all I know, it maybe that was only was over the course of maybe a summer or a few weeks, but my brother Dan still plays guitar, so he was you know, during these kind of hangouts at the house, he would be, you know, come into town and bring his acoustic guitar, and he could play by ear, he could play piano by ear, and pick up songs, and so he was kind of a first musical inspiration for me, I guess.
So the guitar was only there when he came around. So it was mainly listeners there when he wasn't around.
That's correct.
Okay. What about school? Were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
Yeah, I did. I did 1 year of marching band, playing trombone, and then
you were on the bass clef.
Yeah, and then when I was about 14, you know, this town is in South Carolina. We were the last to have anything cool happen.
Everybody says that.
But, you know, when I was about 14, you know, I started, my musical tastes were whatever I liked off of MTV, you know. I liked like the new wave, like the Modern English, Echo and the Bunnymen, that kind of British kind of stuff. But as soon as I started hearing punk rock, and then realizing that there were some, you know, older kids in town that, you know, had their own punk rock band, I knew that's what I had to do.
Well, let me ask you, John, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
Oh, gosh. I believe it was ABBA Greatest Hits.
Kind of punk. What about the first gig you went and saw?
Probably the local punk band.
Okay.
You know, I was 15 at that time, and they were playing the Teen Center, and, you know, that's the first time being in a room with a whole band playing, and of course they were loud, and I was hooked immediately, and I knew right, and then also they I think they may even had their own 7-inch record already, or wow, at least cassette tapes, you know.
Now, by this time, did you already get on the guitar?
It just started. Yeah, I was inspired by the fact that I realized that, you know, someone my age could make music, or that you could do it yourself, you know. And so I you know, had given up on any kind of like, you know, the band, marching band, or anything like that. And I knew I needed to get an electric guitar and a 4-track recorder and learn to
probably
play,
an amplifier
write,
too.
And
probably an amplifier.
Yeah. And so other than skateboarding, that was what I did in high school, and learned to play, got an amplifier, got a couple of microphones, got a
I'm curious, how did you learn?
4-track.
I'm curious, John, how'd you learn? Did you take any lessons, or was it all man alone?
Mostly alone, mostly played along to, you know.
To records. Yeah.
To records, or to more likely to dubbed copies of punk bands on cassettes that were duplicated and passed around.
People got to understand, in those old days, real important to all of us was the mix cassette tape.
Oh, yeah.
Because your buddies would turn you on to new bands and shit, right?
Right. And it would be, you know, oh, you're going to like this. Let me make you a copy of this Angry Samoans record. And I never even saw the album cover or anything. And
sure,
who knows
sure.
how many times it had been duplicated by the time it made it to Florence, South Carolina.
Sure, sure. But those things were so important. You know, it's hard to tell people about that. So did you make a band?
Yeah, I was in some high school bands, and gradually learned to play better, and my guitar playing kind of I tried to take some of the the love of the Beatles, and really we were all just copycat bands, but I was learning to play, I was learning to write songs on my own, I was learning to record. I got shown how to use a 4-track. I got one of my own, and eventually we made it into a little recording studio in a barn in Darlington, South Carolina. Really, really hip guy ran this. At one point it was like a little coffee shop, and he had like folk singer-songwriter nights. But he had an 8-track reel-to-reel recording studio. And as soon as I saw that and saw the mixing board and the knobs and, able to do an overdub and have a reverb return and all this stuff, I was like, that is what I want to do.
Yeah,
that's still what it is to me today. Is,
oh, yeah, we'll get
play, write, and record.
We're going to get to that. What about the first gig?
It was probably like a vet. What do you call it? Ambet's Hall punk show, you know, probably $2 cover. Probably nobody in there was over other than my friend Alan, who was kind of our local guru in town. He had the PA, and he would loan out equipment for bands and, you know, help them out. And he's the one that kind of showed me 4-track recorder and, but mostly young, you know, just young kids. Occasionally there would be, some touring punk bands would come through, even in a little rural, South Carolina.
Oh, of course. But I'm curious about that first gig. Was it a success?
I'm not even sure I can remember.
Okay. So it might have not been too intense.
Yeah. I mean,
well, at least they didn't hate it. You didn't get shit thrown at you.
No, like I said, this was we were basically copying, you know, our scene. Although it was creative and it was fun and it was, you know, I was learning to do things, you know, I realized that, you know, we just weren't very good.
Well, yeah, but you got to start somewhere, right? what was the first song that you wrote?
I don't recall that either.
Okay.
I know that when I was. After I'd been playing a few months and had my cassette recorder, I did try to make my own solo songs. And I tried, it was really very ambitious. I was like, I'm only going to use this one microphone, which was kind of like a, a low end Shure with like a guitar quarter inch plug on the end, you know, high impedance. I'm just going to use this one mic. I'm going to play that old piano that's in the house. I'm going to play I did have an acoustic guitar that was an old Beater that was like my sister's student guitar. And I had my Harmony electric guitar. And I was going to write and record. And I wanted to have it be almost seamless, almost like White Album or whatever, so that one song might be only, you know, a minute and a half and then bleed into the next. And there were some instrumentals and... I never finished it, but I don't know.
It was kind of a concept piece.
Yes, right.
Well, I want to play Soft White China Patterns.
been. All of my born and I do. The hands that held me, raised me, praise and rest up. Like a black dog running the night, full of fear and fight. I said my needle is pinned up against the long red line. Well, I'm too afraid to stay here. In under the strain, and death is coming in cold. Maybe I'm just going down. This is the last time, so now is when. But wherever my soul gets thrown, I come up crazy. Still stand under the sun. Can see myself stretch out on the ground. I'll place my hands into the living sky and remain unchained. And remain unchained. I'll remain untamed, and I'll remain unchained, but restless.
Specialize in neckties, and you're not acting just for a king, a spoiled child to be exact. You don't conceal your acts for clearing out a war field. I like the page you scour. Cells for prisons and hells, 'cause that's what you can do. And that is nothing new. And it is certainly standard. Your facts approved. Click on check out Jumbo Virus.
It won't always be like this. Somewhere, boys will put down their postcodes and weep into tracksuits. Step over double yellow lines and loiter with one another. On the south side of the city, a mother will embrace her daughter for the first time. Try on her new name, find that it fits her lips. Caroline, she will say. Caroline, Caroline, you look beautiful. It won't always be like this. Somewhere, a 70-year-old birdwatcher will buy a motorbike and find that he too can fly. A black woman will show a mixed-race girl how to tie a head wrap and something in her heart will leap. Somewhere, someone will utter the words, I love you, I miss you, I'm sorry. An atheist will speak Allah and smile at the taste of honey on his tongue. The dead will climb out of their graves and shake those standing in line at the bank. Somewhere, you will look down at the stars shooting across the dual carriageway and decide to climb off the iron railings. In the shadow of the service station, you will wait for your dawn.
Something wrong with me, and all these feelings I will never control.
Watt from Pete Rochelle. That was Soft White China Patterns from Danielle Howe and the Tantrums. Then brand new from Barry Burko Band, Future Self. Numbers Band out of Akron, they were actually called 156075, but people, I guess, couldn't remember that, so they just called them Numbers Band. Crazed and Rested. They finally made an album. It's really happening. Harvey Gold turned me on to it. Guy by Voices, Bob Pollard with a new record. Amazing, right? Yeah. Every 3-4 months, this guy. Incredible. Megaphone Riley. Then Bomas Prendon. Get that right, what? Monster Zero. Kim Cooper Complex. Kind of a tangent from those cats. Flip Kilter. Sunrise over Aldi. Aldi's a chain of stores. I think there's a north one and a south one in Germany. But they're in other countries now, too. Sophie Sparum and Christopher Gregory. They're Derby people. It looks like Derby. Quiet Pig out of Italy with This Is the Moment. Parentheses blue. And finally, Grand Republic. Waterslide. So let's continue on with your journey here, John.
Okay.
You gave up on the concept record.
Yeah.
So, but you probably want to get in another band, maybe, huh? You getting some more bands?
I got out of high school and went to a technical college in Charleston, South Carolina, and had my first proper guitar, which was a Fender Telecaster that I purchased from the music store I was working at as kind of my graduation gift to myself. Worked there over the summer, bought this Telecaster, and went away. And within a couple of weeks, got asked to try going to jam with these guys that were getting a new group together, and they had a very particular idea of what they wanted to do. And they were all former kind of heavy metal guys, and I knew them. They're a couple of years older than me, and I knew them as being, you know, in a local metal band. But apparently one guy, his name's Brian McCarter, was working on writing a very different, you know, he's got a concept. And he thought that, you know, the way I played guitar, because I was more influenced by not just punk, but like, Peter Buck and the kind of jangle rock and that kind of stuff. He wanted to see what it sounds like. So I went and checked out this group of guys, and he had spent his summer four-tracking and demoing and writing this music that was very unique, I thought. And, I mean, there really wasn't anybody playing this kind of music, and so I was in. And that became my first actual, like, serious band.
What were they called, John?
I didn't give you any of this music, but that group was called Blido Body.
Blido Body.
And we played...
Can I ask you if this was during either the Music Farm or Cumberland days?
We played both.
Okay.
Yes.
I got some Charleston credibility.
Right. So we started off in Charleston rehearsing, and there was a warehouse that had multiple, you know, bands would rent, and so I was, you know, we were rehearsing with other groups, you know, it was that kind of communal, you know, band situation. And so for our first year, we were kind of based out of Charleston, so we played, you know, Club of Dog Alley, Cumberland's,
oh, yeah.
Miskins, the first
Miskins.
And then half of the band lived in Columbia, so we were back and forth a lot. And in Columbia, we were playing Rockefellers.
Of course, Art Bar.
And we went on to be pretty popular. I mean, we started in '89, and that group, I ended up quitting school and moving to Columbia for the band. And we had the situation where we all lived in the same apartment. We were in this very weird four-bedroom apartment that used to be apparently a dentist office. So there was like the front den was like a almost like a waiting room, and then it was just bizarre. There was like a little room with a sink in it, you know, and strange stuff. But we all lived there, and this particular apartment complex, we were in, I think, unit D or something, and next to us were some friends who had a punk rock band called 49 Reasons, and then in the apartment next to them were a local band that were had gone on from being a cover band to writing their own songs, and that was Hootie and the Blowfish. So it was Darius and Dean, singer, bass player, and their road manager. So there was three Ford Econolines in the parking lot all the time.
So I'm curious. I mean, you spent several years with these guys, right?
Yes. We gigged hard, and I'm looking back now at some of this stuff, and I can't believe that how quickly. Like, I think next year will be the 30th anniversary of the first time we played the 40 watt.
Wow, Athens. No, but yeah. What I'm curious about, John, it seems like it was a pretty formative experience.
Very much so.
But you give me no music.
Well, I had to pick. I know.
Okay, that's okay.
I had to choose.
That's okay.
The Blighted Body Band, we played up and down. We played mostly North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia. A lot of Athens gigs, a lot of Atlanta gigs. We did Florida, Alabama, Virginia, New York City.
All the way. Okay.
All the way.
What about in between? What about some Baltimore, some Philadelphia?
No, didn't, you know, like I said, the majority of it was around the Southeast. And
no, but I mean, if you could have gone all the way to New York, because believe it or not, here in SoCal, New York City was the big, you know, go there and turn around. But there's all the gigs in between.
Right. Believe it or not, we did a tour with Hootie and the Blowfish up the coast. Two bands that had no business being on the same bill together, but they were just cool guys to us. They were friendly, and like literally our Ford Econoline van died, and they just got a record deal, and so they basically let us borrow until we could pay them whatever we paid them, $500 or whatever, for their old Ford Econoline. So we inherited their van, but they took us up the coast one time. Yeah. It was strange. Our music was nothing at all like, I mean, we had no business being
together. Well, that's okay, though. That's probably why, it's just a guess, John, but that's probably why there's more than one band.
Right.
So people can have some choice.
Variety.
Just a little bit.
Blighted Body's claim to fame was in 1994 we played on the Conan O'Brien show. And that was like a contest. It was a college band contest deal. And Conan was still in his first year on television with that program, and the joke was it was his ninth annual college band search, and we had to submit a music video, and all of our friends were like in media arts at USC. So
that's the other USC. This is the Gamecocks, not the Trojans.
Correct.
Not
correct.
The Trojans.
Right.
John, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're at the end of the first hour of the December 16, 2020 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, John Furr. Hold tight for hour two. December 16, 2020. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Oh, well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My hands are shaky and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. Who do you think when you have such a love? I'm in love, I'm all shook up.
back. I lied. I meant. I awaken. I wish. I had. I thought. I approach.
Thank you. See me out.
Four men entered a thousand pounds full, and we were amazed. miles. Other times, spending nearly half the day falling straight up by me to the outside rope. And thus we went along, and thus we returned, having done a work that has resulted without in great advance to science, and for the first time returning without the loss of a single human life. And throughout all this, I was helped by a party of men who were regardless of themselves and only thinking of good things. I earnest acted as today marks the 30th dictatorship record.
Watt for Pedro Show. Start off the second hour with Grand Republic, Big Love. And Sam Bennett after that with All Shook Up, Elliot Elderman, Once in a While, Hi Maya, Neurons Fire, Cookie Butter. This is a tune from Kim Gordon. She's got a band, and this was done in March in Paris. And then the last, a record that never, you know, was done like 30, 40 years ago, but never came out. That's Just Life. And finally, Shackleton, Grand Republic. So, Blido Body, how's that end up for you? Well, first tell me, how did the show go with Conan?
It was pretty good. He was very friendly, and the whole staff and were, you know, very cordial to us and made us feel comfortable. That was, you know, probably one of the top musical experiences of my life, of course. And I think we played pretty well. We had a few plants in the audience. We had some friends, you know, traveled up and were attending the show. And randomly, we had some other friends who just happened to be in New York and happened to get tickets to Conan and were in the audience. So it was very, very fun, very warm day.
Now, what happens with these guys?
Well, so that was kind of the pinnacle of the career, but it just kind of fizzled out after that. We had released a few things on our own, and we're, you know, trying to get this recording contract, and we had A&R people from this or that label, and nothing ever got going, and we changed managers, and it eventually got to the point between 94 and 95 that it seemed like we just kind of got a little bit burnt out on it. The songwriting slowed down. We weren't coming up with new material. I was starting to feel like we weren't playing as well as we needed to play. And, just seemed like people's interest in it started waning. Plus the climate of the music changed and we started developing a harder kind of grunge sound that was probably a bad idea. And
you mean like a candle box? That's a joke, John.
Yeah, I see.
But anyway, this band plays itself out, right? You end up leaving?
Yep. I end up saying I'm not happy, and they are like, well, okay, I guess we'll break up. Band breaks up, and then pretty much immediately I form another group with my good buddy Troy Taig, who is involved in almost all of the music I've sent you. He's a drummer. He and I first started jamming a little bit in 91, where we were working on a demo with our friend Danielle Howell. And Danielle was in a group called Lay Quiet a While, and they had a little record deal with Amy Ray's label, Damon Records, out of Atlanta. And Lay Quiet a While broke up, and then Blido Body broke up. And so out of the ashes of those bands, the bass player from Blido and me and Danielle from Lay Quiet a While and Troy, who was the former Lay Quiet a While drummer, formed a new group, and we called it – well, we didn't have a name at first. We were just Danielle Howell. And she had little record deals. By the way, she said she played a gig with you or a couple of gigs with you. But –
That might happen, because if you call a tour more than a month, I've done 67 of them.
Right.
but I got to tell you, I can't remember.
That's all right. So she's a
no no
very
disrespect no no disrespect.
Singer. Yes, very eclectic folk singer, and also had a propensity for writing music that, you know, was not just folk, rocky. And I kind of felt like that we might could do some kind of quasi-Americana thing. And so we got together. The first record was, we contributed part to it. That was released on Simple Machines Records out of D.C. And then after that, we went, you know, full-time. So it was Daniel High on the Tantrums, and we recorded a couple of albums for Amy's Damon Records label. And again, it was another amazing experience because much more touring, national touring.
You got over to this side?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, that was great. We did Seattle to San Diego.
That's the I-5 tour. That's kind of a hike.
Yes. We had the privilege of working with David Leonard, who produced the first Daniel Howe and the Tantrum CD. And, you know, we were blown away because he had worked on many, many, many major records. Toto, Africa, you know, Prince, Purple Rain, all this incredible stuff. And we got him to this little recording studio in Columbia, South Carolina, called the Jam Room Recording Studio. And we booked it for 3 weeks and recorded this record. And so that was probably my second most major musical accomplishment, was being able to see this guy work.
That's great. I want to play Slow Arrow.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Started that chunk off with Slow Arrow doing Fallen Star. Then the Hysterical Injury with Halo Alkanes. Itch.io with Nefratata. Sane Alliance from Jerome Parker Wells out of St. Louis. Immer out of the D.C. area. We were speaking. Microdosing for Jesus. And finally, Slow Arrow with Mystery World. So, Slow Arrow, what happened to the tantrums in Danielle?
We played lots and lots of gigs. We put out a couple of records. Danielle also had a simultaneous solo career, which she would break away and do, you know, touring with. And then it's very weird. We played a gig in Atlanta at, I think it was called the Dogwood Music Festival or something, a little daytime outdoor arts and crafts tents, you know. We played a show, and then we packed up and went home, and then we just never got back together again. It was very odd.
No speaking.
No, just speaking, but...
speaking about the band.
It was just like we just never had another rehearsal or played another show. Although I did, and Troy and I did some shows later with Danielle with like some different players. But she just kind of, I think it was time for her to move on. And it was probably the right thing to do, and maybe should have happened earlier because, again, I was starting to feel like maybe we needed to improve our sound and maybe add another member to the band on a keyboard player or some kind of multi-instrumentalist. But Danielle ended up moving to Charleston, and where she still is now, and she's still playing music full time.
Great. And Slow Arrow?
That's a new project. That's a new recording project.
Okay, because what happens is you kind of leave music for a little bit, right?
That's right. I've been doing it since, like I said, 89,
sure.
90, and by this time it was probably 2004, and we'd never got a big major record deal. We just kind of, I don't know, getting older.
Less younger.
Yeah, and I just kind of did a little bit of playing around with some other guys around town, but no more touring. And then I kind of got serious about, okay, what am I going to do now? So I got to work on my career, which is in computers and IT. So I kind of got out of the music business. Troy, on the other hand, he ended up going on the road with, to get the order right, Iron and Wine.
Sam.
Yes. So... Sam was buddies with this guy who's another one of my good buddies, Jonathan Bradley, who was a drummer. And Jonathan was in Columbia bands and ended up going on the road with Sam, who was a friend of his from, growing up. And then they added a percussion player, so Troy got that gig. So they're all off touring the world. And so, two of my best buddies are in that group. And meanwhile, I just worked on my IT career.
Which meant going to school, right?
Self-taught.
Oh, self-taught. That's bitching. That's what Kay did. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, December 16, 2020, Dish Wap Pedro Show. Special guest, John Herr. We'll play for hour three. December 16, 2020, it's the third hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
I was standing barefaced with my heart all in my hand. I was waiting on my woman, she was waiting on her man. Then I came to realize that I didn't know him. My life, it was in shambles, she was living in sin. So don't take me to the this take. I'm not afraid to
That's where we got caught. A flash was only one flap. so. Too close to give up. Too far to have hope.
Yeah.
For Pedro Show, start off the third hour with Easy Shakes doing rock and roll. Then Another Umbrella, which featured the late, great Richard Derrick. That was fun. The Portugal Japan with a cover of MC5's Kick Out the Jams. Grand Champion, that's Peen, right? Two E's, people. The Angels Share. I think it has something to do with making whiskey. I can't remember exactly. Some of it, yeah, leaves, evaporates. So, Sporadic, Spontaneous, after that, Revenge, and finally, TV Screen by Easy Shakes. This reminds me of an old Cheech and Chong bit, right? Hey, man, what are you watching? An Indian movie, but it's really boring. You know, the fucking test pattern, right? He's all stoned. Yeah, nothing like the early 70s. Okay, so you teach yourself the pewter stuff, and you launch your IT career, but then you get some other bands going maybe 4 or 5 years ago, right?
Yes. Yes. So after having my IT business, being self-employed, that took up all of my energy and time. But I ended up taking a different job, going to work for one of my biggest customer. They hired me on. So I closed up my business, and then I had more free time, and I'd been following, you know, my buddy Troy on his Iron and Wine, and then later he played with did a few tours with Brandy Carlisle as a touring drummer. But his music slowed down as well, and we were both just working. He's a graphic designer, and I started to get the itch to play again. So around, I think, 2012, got back together playing, and what we ended up doing is he and I decided to form another group together. This time with he and I being the principal songwriters, instead of being the kind of backup guys that we always were. So that group ended up being Grand Republic, which we played our first gig, I think it was January 2016. But those are probably 90% is my songwriting, and then Troy contributes some and takes lead vocals on some. But it's a culmination of our 25 plus years friendship, and we decided to make another little music project out of it.
And Slow Arrow.
That sort of a spinoff of this band, which is based on the interest I had in learning to produce electronic music. And a friend of mine who goes by the name Rick C. Taylor in Atlanta was also working on writing electronic music, and she's a vocalist. And we ended up saying, well, let's just collaborate. So that's kind of a long-distance recording project where I write basically the music, Dropbox files to her, she writes lyrics and vocals, records them at her place, sends them back, I mix. And that group has actually never performed live, and I don't even know if we ever will.
No, but you trade files in collab.
Yes, Yes. And we put out three EPs, well, actually two EPs and a new one that's coming out February.
I got to say, John, when people hear the music come out of the speakers, they don't know how it got that way. So right. I think anything goes. If you got to trade files, if you got to be in the same crib, whatever, you know. At the end of the day, people are hearing rhythms and sounds and words and emotion. So I think however you have to do it, like, you know, look at the current stitch. And what about Easy Shakes?
So I guess my musical taste is a little all over the place where it varies from electronic.
John, that's okay, man. Music is music.
But
I was going to say something to you when you giving up those labels like Americana and stuff. Aren't those things kind of confining?
Well, and that's kind of what happened with, for example, in Daniel Howland Tantrums. We never could focus on a sound. And I think that might have been, it was fun for us, but it might have been confusing for listeners. And, you know, maybe we did not confine ourselves enough, you know. We just kind of played for us and what we liked. And that's kind of how a little bit, to a certain extent, a lot of my musical, you know, projects have been. They're all over the place. So, so Easy Shakes is the first quasi country band I've ever been in. And that is the songwriting of Zach Seibert. He put together a little songwriting club and invited me out of the blue. I didn't even know this guy. But he invited some people from around town. Some of them are very active, like singer-songwriters. And others were like me, and I'd never sat up and played an acoustic guitar and sang a song in front of a crowd. But he invited me just to, you know, and it was a deal where every month you had to bring a song. And everybody would write a random word on a piece of paper, fold it up, put it in the hat. And then they draw the word, and that would be the subject of the song you had to bring the next time. And that went around for about 4 months. And I just remember being very impressed with his singing and his songwriting. And out of those songs, he ended up putting together a group that he called Easy Shakes, which at first was just him and a pedal steel player. And they had a very gripping sound, I thought, a very haunting, just... there was nobody in town that sounded like that. And I was like, I'm going to have to be in another band now. So I hit them up. I'm like, hey, I like what I'm hearing, and I can hear what my guitar playing on top of it may add another dimension, and let's try it out. So we did that. It was just great fun. Sounded good. So I had an idea in mind, a drummer. You know, my friend Troy's too busy to pick up another music project. So we enlisted another good friend of ours. And that group went from discussion in September to first rehearsals in November to first gig on New Year's Eve at a little place called the Art Bar in Columbia.
I know the Art Bar.
To full capacity, you know, full crowd. That was one of those gigs where the hair on your arm just standing up because you know it's a moment. And the place was packed, but dead quiet and listening. You know, it was like a very surreal experience for me in the Art Bar.
Well, much respect for the gig goers.
Yes, yes. And then we recorded at the Fidelitorium in Kernersville, I think it is, North Carolina, with Mitch Easter. And the four of us went up there for a four-day session, tracked all the songs in 2 days, mixed for 2 days, and came home with a full-length. Worked with an engineer. We actually didn't work with Mitch. We worked with an engineer named Missy Thangs. And she was just awesome. She gave 100%.
Raised it. about those we admire, the heroes we choose, the things we desire. Something real that comes with the walls we live. I got hit by a train on Grove Street, and it wrecked my soul. Thank you.
between us isn't what we dream.
Music for this edition, we had Easy Shakes of Grove Street, recorded by John Fuhr. Fur, why? Fuck. Then we had number two. I'm so sorry. Mike Waite, you know. Fucking. One syllable, what? Okay. Two, this song is just called The Number Two from Toleman Tetsu Nakatani. Quite a piece. Golden Earrings. Not the band, and not green ones from the Dan. The Ghost of Sabertooth Tiger. And finally, Space Woman from Slow Arrow. This is a recent too, right?
That's actually...
Yeah, because you put 2021.
That's the debut of that song. That's brand new. Okay. That'll be on a next EP, which is probably coming out in February. And I just wanted to play that because I think it's one of our better... songs, and that one actually has more collaborators on it. That song has Troy on drums, our friend Renee on piano, and bass guitar and backup vocals, Britta Phillips.
Great.
From the band
Superwoman. Space Woman.
We think that's the title.
Well, 2021, I saw the date on it. It was like, this guy, he's planning for the future.
Yes, always.
John, where can people find you on the internet?
Probably the best place is on the Bandcamp.
Okay. So is it just John Furr? And that's two R's, people.
Actually, I don't have any personal. You can find grandrepublic.bandcamp.com or slowarrow.bandcamp.com.
All right.
Or Easy Shakes.
I just want to show you, people, you can take a break, and then you can come back to music and come back stronger. Look at John Furr. Okay, people, December 16, 2020 edition of Wild Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.